You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. The Annals of Internal Medicine earlier this week published an analysis of how individual pathologists' breast cancer diagnoses squared with those of an expert panel examining the same cases. The study is called BPATH for breast pathology. For the most part, the individual pathologists agreed with the experts, over 90% of the time, in fact. However, in cases of atypia or ductal carcinoma in situ, also known as DCIS, there was much less concordance with a tendency toward overdiagnosis. Accompanying that study in the Annals was an editorial written by today's guest, Dr. Alexander Borowski, a surgical pathologist and a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at the University of California, Davis. I should also mention that he co-wrote it with Dr. Laura Esserman of the University of California, San Francisco. Welcome, Dr. Borowski.
Thank you.
Pleasure
to be here.
Your editorial calls out problems with breast biopsy as the gold standard of diagnosis. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Maybe not so much breast biopsy per se. I think biopsy is still our mainstay for diagnostics in almost all organ sites, certainly in the breast. We utilize a core needle biopsy, which is a relatively safe procedure that can be done usually in the radiology clinic, but could be done in a doctor's office as well. And it provides very accurate representation of what is going on in a particular breast lesion, but has some sampling error, and so should still be regarded in some ways as a screening test and not an absolute diagnostic.
I guess everyone would like a more accurate test of, all right, what does this thing mean? So, but in the absence of a molecular marker that's definitive, I guess you don't have one yet, right?
So even molecular markers have problems of false positive and certainly false negative results. Probably more so even than core needle biopsy for the breast, even if we were to develop one of those sort of magical cancer-specific molecular markers. And many people are looking for those. But to date, core needle biopsy, standard histopathology with experienced pathologists reading the slides at a microscope is the best diagnostic procedure we have.
Okay. So in the lesions in the middle of the two extremes, you know, the extremes being benign tissue and invasive disease, they seemed they caused the most diagnostic uncertainty in the BPATH study.
So when we get the slides and look under the microscope, there are a host of different diagnoses. I think many people would like to reduce it down to a simple yes, no. Yes, this is cancer. No, this is not cancer. But it turns out there's lots of different types of even invasive cancer, lots of different types of what we call in situ cancer or ductal carcinoma in situ, and then lots of different intermediate lesions that are proliferative but not necessarily neoplastic. So hyperplasia can happen in a variety of patterns in the breast as well. And, you know, that's to be expected because this is an epithelial lining which is highly hormonally sensitive and has to proliferate under certain hormonal constraints, i.e. pregnancy, so that it's common, I think, for that epithelium to kind of go wrong and overgrow itself. So then we have to figure out what the growth that we see is and what the relative risk to the patient is for that to either become a cancer or to indicate that that patient's at risk for a cancer somewhere else in that breast or either breast.
The BPATH study, as I said earlier, seemed to be fine at the extremes, but in the middle, there was the biggest variance between what the individual pathologist reported out and what the expert panel reported out was in the case of atypia. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And so the way to think about this is that pathologists are trying to apply very specific criteria to nature, and nature doesn't display itself as if it were giving a textbook illustration. There's a continuous spectrum of disease states that can vary over space and time in an individual. And these are being sampled with a reasonable but still very minimal sample in a core needle biopsy. Mm. So we get a little snapshot of a little postage stamp of what's going on in a patient's breast. And from that, we're trying to figure out where on this morphologic continuum they lie. So whenever you apply criteria cut point to a continuous distribution, you're going to find that there are patients close to those lines, and different interpretations from different pathologists, different individuals, are going to fall on either side of that line. So it's almost inevitable the way we've set up our criteria and the way we've set up our system for evaluating these biopsies that we're going to have some discrepancy. Question then becomes, where is it important to be absolutely as perfect as possible, and where is it less important to the patient? And so there are certain criteria points, certain diagnostic terms that result in consequences. And atypia is one of those, certainly, and so is ductal carcinoma in situ, even though those two are both on the same morphologic spectrum.
Your editorial says that how those results are communicated to physicians and patients affects the treatment choices. So if you say that, as you point out in the editorial, if you tell a patient that they've got ductal carcinoma in situ, the word that jumps out is carcinoma, and or even atypia, and in both cases, people reach for the scalpel and want to excise things. But as you explain, sometimes the excision is no better than watchful waiting. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I think that we've got a natural tendency to want to do more to be safer in medicine, and we forget that there are consequences. In the best case scenario, even a radical mastectomy procedure or a modified radical mastectomy procedure is something that's well tolerated by patients. But of course, it's not always the best case scenario. So we have to be wary of that. If we take the example of ductal carcinoma in situ, patients with that diagnosis do believe that they have cancer, and they will call themselves cancer survivors. Some people refer to this as stage zero cancer. So it's a very, very early stage. And there is good evidence that given enough time, that most DCIS lesions, perhaps not all, certainly not all, will progress to an invasive cancer. There's a huge variety, though, of ductal carcinoma in situ, with some of the low-grade lesions taking many decades to progress, and even when they progress, there's no evidence that that's increasing that patient's breast cancer death risk. Uh-huh. In other words, they wind up with cancers that are relatively easily treated, and those patients do very well. So ductal carcinoma in situ comes in, sort of to simplify, low-grade and high-grade patterns, and to consider them the same disease is not really appropriate. Uh-huh. So that's one of the concerns that we raise in the commentary, is that patients with low-grade ductal carcinoma in situ can almost certainly be treated with watchful waiting and or an anti-hormonal therapy like tamoxifen and have equal or perhaps even better outcomes in terms of breast cancer-specific survival without having surgery.
And how do clinicians communicate that uncertainty to patients without frustrating them? Is it possible?
I think it's very difficult, especially given the term. And we should remember the original sort of definition of ductal carcinoma in situ, which dictates sort of everything we do for therapy, is that when we see an area of ductal carcinoma in situ under the microscope, it's not that lesion that we see under the microscope that will progress to invasive cancer, of course, because we've got it under the microscope. But there's some association then with having contiguous disease that was not removed by the biopsy, and that is believed to go on to progress. So some 30 years ago, the epidemiologists and pathologists worked together to define ductal carcinoma in situ as those lesions that the pathologist saw under the microscope that were associated not with 100%, but with an increased risk of developing an invasive breast cancer at that site. And that's in quite in distinction to other lesions, which we refer to as atypia in various patterns, which do not carry that risk at the site. They confer an increased risk to the patient of developing a breast cancer, but it's a global risk, one that applies often to both breasts and is thought to represent a marker of some sort of either environmental or genetic or some combination of factors that led to that increased risk. So going back to ductal carcinoma in situ, even the low-grade lesions have this one property of having an increased risk at the site where that biopsy was taken from. The thing that's not clear to patients and it's hard to convey is that the low-grade lesions can take 40 years for maybe 50% of them to progress. And so for patients in that category, there's no evidence that that's a potentially lethal disease. And it's really not appropriate to consider that patient to have cancer. That cancer word is one that drives some of the overtreatment. So all those patients, even with the lowest grade of DCIS, which some pathologists might disagree and call something less than DCIS, those patients are being treated with lumpectomy and radiation or with mastectomy, and some are even choosing bilateral mastectomy to further decrease their overall risk of having any further breast disease. So, yes, I think the terminology is part of the problem here.
There's a lot of uncertainty, and one of the things that I was thinking about as I was reading your editorial was the distinction between precision and accuracy, and I was trying to formulate an example of that. So, for instance, I came up with the idea that if you're aiming at a target with a rifle, and you shoot three times, and the bullets all land within a diameter of a half dollar from each other, that's precision shooting. But if that cluster of holes is a foot and a half away from the bullseye, it's not accurate shooting, is it?
That's correct.
So
that's a nice illustration of the difference between those two words, and we talk about those in statistics a lot. Huh. But it's hard to be clear about that. In this context, the paper by the BPATH study, which is really well done, outstanding paper, is really only talking about precision in diagnostics for breast pathology.
Mm-hmm.
That is, how close are all the pathologists making this diagnosis? How precise are we at applying the criteria in the same way? And the answer is sometimes we're quite precise in the setting of invasive carcinoma, for example. Most pathologists agree. And there are some examples where it's difficult to tell for sure whether it's invasive, or there are some benign mimics of invasion that can cause false positives. And those are discussed in their paper in some detail in the discussion section. But nonetheless, the precision's quite high among pathologists. But we point out in our commentary that that's not really the same as accuracy.
Right.
So in the era of mammographic screening for breast cancer, we've learned that we're detecting many, many more early-stage breast cancers than we ever detected, almost twice as many as before we started implementing widespread mammography screening. And yet, we've seen very little decrease in the patients presenting with late-stage breast cancer. The reason for this, at least the best explanation for this, is that many of those patients had breast cancers which we, for all intents and purposes, recognize as being the same as conventional breast cancers, but we know today that those breast cancers were never going to cause those patients any problem. They are what you might refer to as innocuous or indolent breast cancers. And there's been a lot written about indolent cancers in other sites, certainly we know that men, as they age, eventually all develop small prostate cancers that are not harmful. And thyroid cancers can be found in autopsy studies at high rates that were never harming those patients either. So this is a common theme across many organ sites. The question is, how do we figure out which are which in breast cancer and avoid treating those indolent, invasive cancers? And said another way, we might say, well, if you want to call it cancer, it ought to be a proven, potentially lethal disease deserving of our full treatment armamentarium. And so we really shouldn't be calling something that is indolent or innocuous cancer in the first place.
Yeah.
So we're just learning how to distinguish those, unfortunately, and we don't yet know with any certainty which are which.
So for someone who's read your editorial, what do you hope they will take away from it and maybe apply to their practice as clinicians, not so much as pathologists, but as clinicians who are dealing with patients and trying to explain these things to them?
Well, there's a couple of things that I hope they take away. I do hope they take away a concept that many breast cancers that we detect today are going to turn out to be indolent or innocuous, and try, even with the diagnosis of invasive cancer, to ensure that patients aren't overly alarmed about that. I think, secondly, I would like them to come away with the concept that ductal carcinoma in situ comes with a wide range of impacts, with the highest grade, most aggressive ductal carcinoma in situ probably, almost certainly deserving immediate excision and or radiation to eradicate that area, even though it has not yet invaded. And yet, lower grades of ductal carcinoma in situ can almost certainly be watched and perhaps treated with anti-hormonal therapy. And that's not in the conventional treatment modality in most places in this country right now, but I think it is coming up in a few places, and I think that people need to be more willing to understand what the risk is for low-grade DCIS. It's very low. In fact, there's no evidence that a patient with a diagnosis of low-grade DCIS has any kind of increased risk of breast cancer death. There's only evidence that they have increased risk of having a recurrence of their DCIS or developing an invasive breast cancer at a later date. But even said that, the invasive breast cancer that they develop, that they may be at risk for developing at a later date, is not known to be impactful in terms of survival compared to the general population. So that's a hard thing to convey. I think that by itself is going to take a lot of work and probably going to require a change in our nomenclature, where instead of calling those low-grade DCIS lesions carcinoma, which is embedded in the word DCIS, we probably need a new term. Dr. Esserman has proposed that we call them indolent lesions of epithelial origin, which she likes to use the acronym IDLE to describe, IDLE, which is sort of descriptive of their behavior, which they are quite idle. And I think that can be useful. And then I guess the last thing that I'd like people to take away from our commentary is the fact that the data do show from the BPATH study that there is a natural, probably a human tendency for pathologists to play it safe a bit or think they're playing it safe by calling things sort of as high a scale as they think might be possible, or overcalling things in favor of undercalling things.
Yeah.
And so that includes atypia. That includes recommendations that pathologists sometimes make to their surgical colleagues in passing, or sometimes even in comments on their diagnoses, that areas of atypia should be re-excised. And that, again, the concept there is they think they're playing it safe. They'll get a better look at it. It may be that they've got the tip of an iceberg, which turns out to be a low-grade DCIS, and they still don't feel comfortable just following that, even given our improvements in imaging. but we'd like them to feel more comfortable with that and try to stick to the criteria as much as possible. You can see in other commentaries there's some criticism of the way the study was done and the limitations that were imposed on the study pathologists. They weren't allowed to consult colleagues, for example.
Right, they were given.
Even though in practice we do that all the time.
And they were given a single slide from each case, right?
That's right. So in practice, we have more opportunity to drill down on cases that we find that are close to the line. Yeah. There's some truth to that, but I think that our commentary, Dr. Esterman and I, are pointing out that these lines are quite arbitrary, and the difference between what might be construed by some as minimal levels of atypia and by others as hyperplasia without atypia really has no prognostic difference, even though that low level of atypia is going to trigger, in many cases, additional surgery. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to avoid that, again, because you're applying these arbitrary criteria cut point to this continuous spectrum of disease. But I think we can begin to avoid that if we admit the probability up front of what our diagnosis means. And so in the case of many of our clinical analytes, if you ordered a serum chemistry assay for sodium, for example, we could tell you precisely that your sodium level is X and that our instrument measures X plus or minus a certain degree of variance. I think we need to get some more of that into our reporting in anatomic pathology and surgical pathology. We need to be able to tell you that if the diagnosis is atypical ductal hyperplasia in the breast, that there's a 10% chance that that might be non-atypical and perhaps a 2% chance that it might be a low-grade DCIS, but point out that low-grade DCIS still is not the same as high-grade DCIS.
Yeah.
Similarly, you want to point out what the risk level associated with each of those categories is. And we know what those are for our conventional terminology, but I think that we're learning more and we need to learn more about how to more accurately express what that patient's actual risk is. And when we say risk, it should not just be risk of recurrence, risk of having an upstage on excision. It should be actual risk for survival benefit or risk of breast cancer specific survival.
All right. Well, that's good advice, Dr. Borowski. Thank you for it. And thank you for spending time with us today.
My pleasure.
That was Clinical Conversation number 200. Maybe we should open some champagne. All its less numbered siblings can be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you through the NEJM group. Many thanks to the group, to Kristen Kelly, my executive producer, and to you for your kind comments and your time. I'm Joe Elia.